Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Staskel, joined this week, the first episode of 2022, with our first ever Canadian co-host, Josh Cloak, joining me from north of the border. Josh, thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate having you on. And we're going to be talking a lot this month, considering what's coming here in a few weeks up in your hometown, Hamilton, Ontario. The Hammer.
I hope you can make it. I really hope you're going to be there.
Me too.
I talk up Hamilton right now. I'm looking outside my window at beautiful Hamtown. It's going to be cold.
Yeah.
But I know that you are, you know, secretly Canadian yourself, so you should be able to withstand the cold.
I'm a closet Canadian. That is correct.
There you go.
No, hopefully we'll talk a little bit about the USA and Canada World Cup qualifier later on and just kind of what may or may not be happening in terms of fan involvement and just kind of the whole scene around that game as COVID-19 rears its ugly head here all around the world. There's a ton of stuff that has happened since we last recorded an episode. A lot of stuff that happened this week. Steve Cherundolo was hired as LAFC head coach. Ricardo Pepi got sold for up to $20 million to FC Augsburg. Real Salt Lake got new owners. David Blitzer and Ryan Smith, the owner of the 76ers and Crystal Palace and all sorts of other sports teams, as well as the owner of the Utah Jazz and Ryan Smith. And I'm forgetting something. Bradley Carnell was hired as St. Louis SC's first coach. They'll begin play in 2023. We'll talk about all of that stuff in due time. But what Josh is on to talk about and what really is the biggest news, I think, that we've had in MLS in, I don't know, months, years? In terms of player signings, this might be the biggest one ever. In fact, Lorenzo Insigne, the Italian international, is going to Toronto FC. It hasn't been officially announced yet as we sit here recording on Thursday afternoon, but it's certainly been reported to death pretty much at this point that the deal is done. He'll be joining when his contract with Napoli expires in the summertime, so he'll be playing with Toronto from July on. It's a 4-year guaranteed deal. There is an option for the end of 2026, the deal expires in the summer of 2026, and he's going to be getting paid a gross annual salary of roughly $15 million a year, according to what Paul Tenorio and I were able to find out the other day, earlier this week. That is the highest salary in MLS history by like 2x. This is a massive, massive deal. Josh, of course, is up in Ontario. He's covered TFC closely for years. He's written a book about TFC, as a matter of fact. You should check it out if you're interested in that. It's a good one. Josh, what do you think this means for Toronto? When you saw this, when you first heard about it, what was the overarching kind of takeaway? And now that it's done here, what are your overall thoughts?
Well, I remember first kind of hearing rumblings about this well over a month ago. I remember kind of texting you and Paul and texting, you know, some people in Italy, kind of thinking like, do we think there's actually anything to this? Which was met with some, you know, big eye rolls, some laughter by some people I talked to, but
I think when you texted me about it, I was like, that doesn't sound real. Like, no way Insigne would come. He's just trying to angle for a payday in Italy. That's it.
Right. This was one that just wouldn't go away. I remember thinking it was real when I had someone text me and say, look, their people in Toronto FC are going to MLSC and saying, can we afford this? Right. Accounting got involved and it became real, and that they were putting together this mega contract proposal for him. And to me, that makes a lot of sense, because if you're Toronto FC, you are completely, I would even say fed up with the last 2 years and the way that Toronto FC, just as a club within Toronto, have fallen off the map, right? I think this was a team that at their peak in 2016 and 2017, they could legitimately challenge the Blue Jays, the Toronto Blue Jays, the Major League Baseball team, in terms of, you know, that ranking within the city's kind of teams. Obviously, no one touches the Maple Leafs, and then the Raptors are a little further, you know, below that. And then it gets kind of weird in the summertime because, again, when you're Toronto FC and you're selling out a lot of games in the summer, you're challenging the Blue Jays. You're being talked about a lot, you know, in sports radio. You're being covered a lot. And, you know, it kind of starts with Greg Vanney leaving after 2019. And this team, obviously, COVID hits this team very hard in that they were forced to move away from Toronto for long stretches of the 2020-21 season. When they return in 2021, their attendance is paltry, right? They're not getting talked about. The team, yeah, obviously,
and some of that was due to restrictions, correct?
Sure. Yeah. They were just literally not allowed to play in Toronto. But when they did return, it was a very unceremonious return. And I think if you look at the people up top at Toronto FC, Bill Manning in particular, you know, Bill Manning is someone that really swings for the fences when it comes to Toronto FC. He always has, right? And he very much embodies that Tim Leiwicki line of thinking, right, with Toronto FC. We want this team to be not just winners. We want this team to be big. We want this team to be considered, you know, one of the gold standard clubs in MLS. And they weren't that for the last 2 years. So what do you do to get people kind of paying attention again? You swing. You swing really, really big. And that's Lorenzo Insigne. And, it, you know, we've talked about this before. It makes sense for Toronto because Toronto has a massive Italian population. One of the biggest Italian populations in North America. Right. And we saw people come out in droves when Sebastian Giovinco was signed. I can tell you firsthand, you know, when the Italian national team plays in the World Cup and in the Euros, there are multiple pockets of the city that shut down. And then there are multiple pockets of the city where streets are flooded afterwards when the Italian national team wins. You don't see that with any other team, maybe the Portuguese national team in 2016. But even then, nothing really compares to what happens in Toronto when the Italian national team wins. So you sign a player that will really, really resonate with the fan base here. And what you've done is you've signed a player that immediately makes large, you know, percentages of the fan base say, I want to be back. I want to see this. I want to even see, like, is this real? Right? Because we were skeptical for so long. You want to, and a lot of the fans I talk to and kind of gauging the fan base right now, there's a lot of that right now. Like, is this real? Is Fabrizio Romano tweeting about Toronto FC? Right? Like, is this real? And so that's why I think this signing, I think, you know, if you're Bill Manning, you, this is a big win because you have landed. I remember when I first kind of texted you about this and you said, dude, he'd be the best player in MLS. What are we even talking about? That's why it seems unbelievable. But now we're here, and so it's a massive step forward for the club.
Yeah, and just to backtrack a little, and for those of you who aren't so familiar maybe with Insigne, give a little bit of info on his career. This is a guy, he had 19 goals in 35 games in Serie A last year for Napoli, 7 assists. I think he's got 5 goals and 6 assists for the club across all competitions so far this season. I think that's in 18 appearances. He's played for the Italian national team for years. He was one of their best attacking players at the Euros last summer, which of course they won. You know, he played a large role in shutting down those streets and creating the party, I'm sure. Although maybe there wasn't such a party last summer with everything going on in the world, but that's neither here nor there. He's an incredible player. He's an attacking player. Lines up mostly kind of on the left-hand side. He can play underneath and kind of that number 10 role, of course, as well. He can play as a forward as well. I think he'll probably end up lining up a little bit on the left for Toronto next to Pozuelo. Maybe he plays in front of Alejandro Pozuelo, who, by the way, was the MLS MVP not so long ago. obviously had a rough year in 2021. But those two together in any shape or form in the attack will be quite potent. And once he gets here, as long as he's fit and as long as he's motivated, and you would hope that he would be considering what his salary is going to be, he should really kind of have a ton of success, be an instant kind of, when he has a full season, an MVP front runner. And I'm quite excited to see what he does in this league. Josh, you were kind of talking about it. You know, Toronto is a club that's taken big swings successfully and unsuccessfully, but successfully in the past. And of course, the most successful era was 15, 16, 17, with Giovinco and a younger Jozy Altidore and a younger Michael Bradley, three of the highest paid players in the league, three of the highest profile players in the league, and one of the best teams in league history in 2017 when they won MLS Cup, when they won the Supporters Shield and the Canadian Championship. They went away from that model a little bit these last couple of years. Pozuelo came in and did great right off the bat, but he's not really that big name guy like they were going after in the past. Obviously, last year was a brutal season for them in so many ways. You lose your head coach, Greg Vanney, who walks away to go join another team in MLS. That's not very big club status, you know? and then they're just dreadful all season long in the league. They hire Chris Armas. They fire him 11 games later. They have this weird situation where, you know, Javier Perez is the interim head coach and then he's not interim, but he's only there for a few months. And it's just kind of, what's the point of any of this? Season ends. They get Bob Bradley, the biggest name coach in the league for my money. And now you see they go out and they get Insigne. You talked about the enthusiasm and it kind of dying down. But what do you make of them returning to kind of this era of big swings? Do you think it's sort of a correction for the last couple of years? And what do you think really motivated TFC to kind of go back this direction?
Yeah, to me, it feels like a correction. It almost, and we won't know until we see how everyone kind of performs, it almost feels like a bit of an overcorrection. In a way, because and I'm not saying you're putting the cart before the horse here, but what you're doing is adding this massive designated player, you know, who has the potential to be one of the best players in league history. Well, you already have three designated players on the books, right? And you're just kind of swinging and saying, let's figure this out later. It's, again, I mentioned this, it's all very reminiscent of the Tim Leiwicki line of thinking. You know, when Tim Leiwicki adds Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley and Gilberto in you know, the bloody big deal of 2014.
Man.
He literally comes out and says, our accountants at MLSE think this is nuts, right? but this is the kind of deal.
Lie.
Right. But this is the kind of deal that, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, he's essentially saying logic doesn't necessarily apply when we want to become great. So that's what I kind of think is happening here. I think Bill Manning is adopting that Tim Leiwicki line of thinking and saying, you know, we need to remind ourselves what we are or what we can be as a club. And I've heard from multiple people that Toronto's paltry attendance this year really, really, really bothered a lot of people because at their kind of core, even before Toronto FC were who they were now, right? From kind of 2007 to 2014.
Yeah, when they were terrible on the field.
When they were terrible, they still had this really great fan base that really adopted that kind of European fan base mentality. And they, you know, along with Seattle, were kind of that MLS 2.0, right? They were these teams that brought this great atmosphere, regardless of the product on the field. If you can't even have that, there was a lot of people at MLSC that were really disappointed that they'd just fallen so far off. So you kind of do this to remind everybody at the club that ego is okay, that stress, that swinging to be the best team in MLS.
Get their swagger back. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know what? When you walked around the club in 16 and 17, you felt that. You really did. Yeah. You felt people thinking, listen, we're a big team. We want to be treated like a big team. We have egos. We know how to manage egos. Greg Vanney, you know, knew how to manage big egos. Sebastian Giovinco, Jozy Altidore, you know, these are big
Bradley.
Personalities.
Yeah.
Michael Bradley, yeah. But you bring these players in, you bring a player like Insigne in because you kind of want to remind not just your fan base, not just, you know, other people at the club. You want to remind other players, hey, this is where you want to be. This is a destination club.
Yeah.
Right. Because I genuinely think when you look at Toronto FC and you talk to people that, you know, signed with the club in and around that time, kind of the Drew Moores, they wanted to come because Toronto can offer things to people in that kind of age bracket, right? Yeah. People with young families. It's a safe city.
They would wine and dine these guys. They would take them courtside to Raptors games, like MLS free agents. You know,
it's. I mean, Toronto as a city is New York light in a lot of ways, right? It has everything you would want in terms of entertainment, but it's safe. It's clean. People are notoriously.
The weather is gorgeous.
Gorgeous for about 2 months a year. But those are the 2 months you're here, right? It has so much to offer. And I think all of that was kind of lost. It just felt like over the last few years, Toronto FC's attempts to build the club were kind of a little too slow and a little too patchwork. You know, Bill Manning promised a big rebuild. And, you know, you start with this kind of centerpiece. Maybe you can parlay that into other big names as well, which it looks like he might.
Yeah. You mentioned the DP situation and how they have four. And they can carry three until Insigne shows up, which, again, won't be until July. So they have some time to sort this out. But they currently have Alejandro Pozuelo on the books, Jozy Altidore on the books, and Jefferson Soteldo, who was brought in less than a year ago, on a significant transfer from Brazil. He was a massive disappointment last year. You know, Josh, you and I have both heard that they're, you know, probably looking to move him on. Jozy Altidore had huge issues last year. Was sort of banished from the team for a while when Armas was head coach, then brought back in. He actually got into form at a certain point, but he dealt with some injury concerns as well. He's got at least 1 year left on his contract, and he's owed several million dollars on that deal. So there's been talk that maybe they'll buy him out. Maybe they'll look to move him in some other way. If they get rid of Soteldo and Altidore, they'll have another designated player spot open that they might be able to use. But what do you anticipate happening so that they can become compliant? Do you think they'll get rid of both? Do you think they'll get rid of one? How do you see it playing out?
Well, I should mention too, and I know we've talked about him a lot, but I think it's critical to mention here, when you talk about those designated players, since Bill Manning kind of takes hold of when he comes into Toronto FC after the 2015 season, their big core, Altidore, Giovinco, and Bradley, they had been locked up.
Yeah.
Right? They were already signed by the club. You look at the designated players that have been signed under Bill Manning proper. All of them, I would argue, except for Alejandro Pozuelo, have been misses. Pablo Piatti was a miss. Re-upping on Jozy Altidore, in hindsight, was a miss. Jefferson Soteldo, a miss. These are not the players that they should have been bringing in. So Bill Manning really needed a hit here, and he got it. But in terms of what they're going to do, first of all, Jozy Altidore looks as good as gone. I suspect they'll buy out his deal.
But they have to agree to a buyout first, though.
And they're in a difficult spot right now because if you're Jozy Altidore, you're saying, well, I know how much you paid or you will be paying Lorenzo Insigne.
You can afford to pay me out in full.
And so I suspect that's going to, and I think when Bill Manning goes to MLSE's board and says, this is the money we're going to need for Insigne, but also we're going to need this money for Jozy Altidore as well. That's why it's such a big kind of financial ask. The Jefferson Soteldo one is a little more tricky. I have heard that he's not particularly happy here, and I think that's been reported elsewhere as well. His transition wasn't smooth. Are there clubs that are interested in him in South America? Yes, but it gets tricky because
you got to imagine TFC would be selling back for pennies on the dollar.
Exactly. And again, clubs would know this too. And I think a lot of the clubs that would be interested in buying him aren't in great financial places right now. So is a loan deal possible? Yeah. Like then you kind of punt it, right? You loan him out for this year.
Maybe he increases his value. He's still a young player.
Yeah. And you punt it and you figure it out the next year, right? Maybe you're only able to bring in your other DP, if you want to make a big splash, I don't know, on a one-year deal with an option, as they did with Piatti, and you figure that out later.
I don't see that happening if it's a big splash guy.
I don't know. But I do know that this kind of Insigne is only one piece of the puzzle. But I do think that both Soteldo and Altidore will not be back with the club next year, because you don't just want to bring in one player and say, this is it. You want Insigne to be part of a much larger rebuild. And I think it's a difficult...
Can't you sell Bob Bradley as part of that too?
Sure. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, it's a difficult word for me to kind of quantify or whatever, but I think there's been a lot of concerns about the club culture at Toronto FC over the last 2 years. I think,
because we've been spending a lot of time on the last 2 years, and I just want to clarify real quick. In 2020, they finished second in the league in the regular season, playing never in Canada apart from like six games, spending most of their season in Hartford, Connecticut. They lost in the playoffs to Nashville in very disappointing fashion, but it wasn't as if the season itself was terrible. It was pretty good, all things considered. No, you can disagree. You can disagree.
I
know you're a polite Canadian.
Yeah, well, I am. I try to be. Playoff success is what matters here.
Sure.
Right? Maybe if you get a supporter shield out of it and it's a trophy you can put up in the training grounds. But
yeah, they weren't satisfied, to be clear. But it's not as if they were like a train wreck either.
Well, I just think there were a lot of questions being asked about why was this team so good, but things just, they couldn't make it work over an expansion team, right? I think playoff success is what matters here, especially considering this is not a team like looking to build towards their first championship, right? They've won, you know, a championship. They want...
Yeah, and that was sort of towards the end of the window for a lot of the guys.
Well, look, I mean, I think we have to be thinking, when we're talking about Toronto FC, we have to be thinking about what's the one empty trophy cabinet in the training grounds. It's the CONCACAF Champions League. And like this, we're talking about a team that was miserable this season, but that's what they want. They want to win that CONCACAF Champions League. You talk about losses that sting, right? I was there in 2018 when they lose to Chivas. That is one that I don't think a lot of people at the club have gotten over, right? So this is when we're talking about aspirations. That's what they're going for. But yeah, I don't think Jose Altidore is back, and I think they find a way to either loan Soteldo out, sell him on, you know, this is probably where you want to be. So let's look at this loan deal with an option to buy. But I think they just want to do a bit of a clean slate here. So there's going to be a few changes.
What do you make of kind of the state of the pieces that are coming back on the roster? We know now that Richie Larea is gone. He's going to Nottingham Forest. He's being sold there. So that's, you know, one of the few bright spots from 2021 now out of the picture for TFC.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, it's interesting. There were four players that spoke at their year-end availability: Michael Bradley, Alejandro Pozuelo, Jonathan Osorio, Richie Larea. We can assume those, obviously, you know, the other three will be back, but it was kind of critical that I think the club was looking at Richie Larea as being kind of one of those key pieces for this year. Now he's gone. So, I mean, what do you have right now? It looks like they're going to bring Ayo Akinola back. And I actually like the idea of Ayo Akinola playing kind of up top with Lorenzo Insigne. That's kind of a fun little...
That'd be nice for Ayo Akinola, for sure.
I should say so. That's probably a reason, you know, you do wonder if in terms of contract negotiations, he's, you know, been looking around, and then you kind of say, well, you get to play with Insigne, right? So, Jonathan Osorio remains a key piece in the middle. Marky Delgado as well. In the back.
Real questions in the back. Really. I don't know what's going on back there.
You're being polite now. It's a mess. It is an absolute mess in the back, right? Omar Gonzalez is not back. Eric Zavaleta is not back. Now Richie Larea is not back. Aro didn't have a good season at all. You know, Chris Mavinga is a piece, but I'm not convinced he can be the player he was in 2016 and 2017. What sticks out to me, and this was the lead in my story when Bob Bradley was hired, you know, Bob Bradley walks out and kind of introduces himself to everyone that, you know, in the media corps, Toronto FC, and he walks out with his chest held high, and you can tell he's, you know, trying to project confidence, and that's great. That's who he is. And his first question was kind of about the state of the roster, and he stops and he exhales audibly. He's like, there's a lot of work to do, right? So, you know, you can't hide from the fact that, again, besides Osorio, Marky Delgado, who didn't have a great year, you know, Justin Morrow has retired. This is a team that I think rebuild is putting it politely, because I think what if you they bring on Insigne and they re-sign Akinola, that's still four, maybe five pieces of a starting 11, right? It's not, this is not a roster as it stands that is anywhere close to championship caliber.
Yeah, might take a year. I think with Insigne on board, they'll get there eventually.
And we should know, as if we haven't yet, he's coming mid-season.
Yeah, we
right.
Have. Yeah.
So we got to make, like, this team has to make sure that they're in playoff contention when he gets there.
Yeah, or at least in the neighborhood. You know, we've seen how MLS teams can make runs. Seattle Sounders, 2016, most famously out of the playoffs, and then a leaded arrow showed up and they went and beat Toronto for MLS Cup. We're going to take a quick break, real quick. We're going to come back and talk about that salary number, that $15 million salary number, and kind of what it says about the league as a whole and some of the league's roster rules. Stay with us, Allocation Disorder. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We are back. Allocation Disorder, Sam Stasekel, joined this week by Josh Cloak, athletic writer up in Toronto, or Hamilton, more accurately, up in Ontario, north of the wall. I don't know the politics, even though I'm a closet Canadian. You know, I don't know the rivalry between the Hammer, Hamtown, and Toronto. So
I think people in Hamilton like to think of the city as like what Brooklyn was before Brooklyn was cool. If that makes sense. So that's kind of like,
but like geographically, you're solid hour from Toronto, right?
In a little under, I would say under. Yeah, okay. I can get downtown on a good 45 minutes, like without any traffic.
All right. Well, I mean, shoot, I live in Brooklyn, and it takes me about 45 minutes to get to Central Park in Manhattan. So
there you go.
You know, I guess it's not that different. There we are. From one Brooklyn to another. Here we go. Lorenzo Insigne, probably not going to be living in Hamilton. He'll probably be in downtown Toronto or thereabouts. He's going to have the money to live wherever the hell he wants to. As I mentioned in the first segment, going to be making $15 million pre-taxes, should be noted, on an annual basis from Toronto FC. That's by far the highest salary in MLS history. More than twice what Zlatan Ibrahimovic was paid by the LA Galaxy in his final year at that club in 2019. That was the previous high salary. Josh, what do you make of that number, man? What do you think it does for the market? What do you think it says about Toronto? Do you think this makes it easier on balance to get more attractive players like Insigne to MLS in the future? Do you think it makes it harder? What are your overall takeaways there?
So my first takeaway is that sometimes when it comes to salary numbers, Toronto FC, a lot of clubs, I suppose, but Toronto FC can be a bit cagey. This is one that I wouldn't run away from. This is one that, like, I would be trying to get out there as much as possible for a few reasons. One, you know, NBA and NHL teams, which is, you know, the Toronto FC's kind of competition, they publish their salary numbers. We know right off the bat how much these players make. And I think if you're Toronto FC, you want to kind of show that you are spending, you know, frankly, as much, if not more, than the Maple Leafs, right? The highest paid player on the Maple Leafs earns a little bit under $12 million a year. They also have two other players that are earning in and around there.
That neighborhood?
Yeah. I mean, they spend to the salary cap. But I think
the Raptors have higher paid players, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, the NBA is kind of astronomical. But I think the point is that you – I would think you would want to publicize this is how serious we take – the kind of rebuild of this team. This is, and if you're MLSC, you want to kind of show that as well. Is that a lot of money to be paid to one player when there's 10 other players on the field? Yeah, it does feel like a lot considering what we talked about earlier. There are some huge holes to fill in this roster, right? So is it the best move from kind of a soccer, roster building perspective? I don't know, unless he can start banging in goals completely on his own, which maybe he can.
I think probably.
Probably.
I mean, we saw what Giovinco did. And Insigne has been better in Italy than Giovinco ever was.
Yeah. But I do wonder, you know, could that money have been spent more effectively elsewhere to build a roster?
No, not really. That's the point.
Well, yeah. And I just think as well, what you're doing here is yes to win, but it's also to get people interested again. And so I just think the splash that, like if you announce that number, the splash that could make, listen, this will be front page news, in Toronto. And I think as well, you know, if you put that number out there, it shows the rest of the city, look, we are going to spend like the Leafs are. We're going to spend like the Jays are. Pay attention to us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just Vlad Guerrero Jr.
No.
Anymore, you know? To answer your question, though, is this the smartest way to spend the money given all of the other holes on the team? This is the only way they can do it, right? That's the point, right? Toronto FC didn't have any open DP spots, right? So they still have to get one of those off the books like we were talking about earlier. But this is the whole way MLS is structured. And this right now is my biggest frustration with the league because, okay, you have a club like Toronto that is willing to spend $15 million a year on one player. One player. He's making more money than basically every other team in the league paid their entire roster last year. There are only six teams in the league with a $15 million or more payroll in MLS in 2021. He's making that on his own, right? So you have a team that's willing to spend this amount of money to bring in one guy. That's great. But if you really want to be a league of choice or one of the top leagues in the world, or if you, to your point earlier, want to win the CONCACAF Champions League and be better than Liga MX, then wouldn't it be better to take, you know, say, get a $5 million salary player? Right? That's still a top five salary in the league. And then take $10 million and spread it across the next 10 players on the squad. Right? And then you have a starting 11 where maybe every player is making $1 million or $1.5 million or more. And if you enter that space, right, you're getting into a really competitive place with every league in the world in terms of salaries. And if you're doing that, then what can that team be? Then what can MLS become? Right? But that's not how it's structured. Instead, you have to allocate all of your resources on your three designated players in terms of salaries anyway. Right? You can pay transfer fees for young money players, but you know, it's just kind of a frustration for me because this is not maximizing the money that a team like Toronto is able to spend, at least in terms of the overall level of play. Maybe TFC does it anyway. Right? Maybe they do it like this anyway. Even if there were no restrictions and no DPs and just a floor and a ceiling in terms of salaries. But, you know, I wish they had the freedom to make that choice.
Do you think there's going to be a knock-on effect? Like, do you think, I'm curious what other teams, how other teams are going to react to this. Are other teams going to say, Toronto's out of their mind, and this is a lot of ego, and this is a team that is just desperate to get back on the map? Or do you think this is kind of going to raise the floor in terms of the way teams should be thinking about who they should go after in terms of the international market?
I think it does change who you can go after a little bit.
Right.
Right. Because, you know, this is all like chipping away in terms of MLS history. And of course, they've had players with far bigger names than Lorenzo Insigne before. He'll sell tickets in Toronto. Maybe he'll move some tickets in New York or Boston or Montreal, but he's probably not going to sell too many tickets league wide when Toronto FC goes on the road. But, you know, in terms of off field impacts, Zlatan or Henry or Beckham or what have you, those guys will make bigger impacts. But
yeah, that was my question. Like, where does this rank for you in terms of, you know, the league has now had a bit of a lengthy history, but let's say the last 10 years, where does this rank in terms of transfers, incoming transfers?
Ah, man, I don't know where exactly it ranks, but it's bigger than almost any, I would argue, in terms of where he is in his career.
Yeah.
Right? Because this is a legitimate world-class player right now, right? Like, legitimately. He's one of the best players in Serie A. He's one of the best players for the Italian national team, which, you know, was the toast of the world this last summer, right? He's going to continue to be a key player for that team, presumably, up to and through at least the World Cup in Qatar. Next in November and December.
And I should note, this is something that I think is, I don't want to say lost, but I think this is a really, we were talking about all the benefits. Here's a key benefit for me. And as soon as the deal really got legs, this is where my mind started to go. Let's say Italy qualify, which they haven't yet for 2022. Every time Lorenzo Insigne is mentioned in a starting, starting yeah. lineup, people Toronto are going to be FC. Mentioning Toronto FC on World Cup broadcasts,
yeah.
on World Cup broadcasts, broadcast around the globe. And you can't put a price on that.
Right.
If you're Toronto FC,
and that makes it easier to recruit. That makes it easier to recruit, right? Because other players see that and they're like, oh, it's acceptable to go to MLS at this stage in your career now. Now there's a rub, right? He's making $15 million. And like, that's no doubt what TFC had to pay to get him, right? So you do the deal. But that does set a market, right, for the next Lorenzo Insigne.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so in some ways it makes it easier. It chips away. It opens that door a little bit further to get kind of more in their prime, not towards the end, but in their prime. And he's 30. He'll be 31 relatively soon. So it's not like he's young. But to get more guys like that, it opens the mm-hmm. door a little further. But you just raise the price on him too, right? So it sometimes makes it a little harder. I am curious what other folks around MLS think of it. You know, I haven't had really that discussion yet with like other GMs.
Right.
You know, the discussion I have had is that, yeah, this guy's going to be killer for them. Like, he's going to destroy, right? Which is like what everyone knows and thinks. But I am curious from that side of things. I don't think it's going to affect the budgets of other clubs, right? I don't think all of a sudden FC Dallas is going to go, oh, well, Toronto did this, so now let's go spend $15 million on a player. Like, no, I think we know what most of these teams are. Maybe it forces one or two to get a little bit more aggressive, right? I could see it being like a motivating factor for an LA Galaxy, who likes to be the big team in yeah. this league, right?
Yeah.
And who has an open DP spot, by the way. So maybe there's something along those lines. I don't think it'll have huge ripple effects in that way, but you know, it is another step in the ongoing arms race between some of these bigger teams. And Toronto is going to be harder to beat now, right? So if they're going to be harder to beat and they're going to be a contender, well, then the other contenders have to up their game too. So I think it'll have effects in that way.
Yeah, I think so too. And I just think that's where Toronto FC want to be considered. They want to be considered as you know, a premier destination. What I don't think will change, though, you know, Toronto has long had difficulty attracting younger players. I think they've always made it their sell to players kind of in that 27, 28, 29 range.
How old was Giovinco when he came? Like 26, right?
But he had a family, right? And so they're after guys with families because that's what you sell, Toronto. You sell schools, you sell safety, you sell cleanliness.
Toronto is a fun place, like for a young person, you know?
We can find a lot of fun, but it doesn't have the cachet that New York or LA or Miami has.
Sure.
Right?
I don't think it's too far behind, though. Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe I run around in different circles than international soccer stars. That's possible.
Perhaps. But no, I mean, I do think, but this has long been a sell. Look at every designated player they brought in. They have families, right? I mean, even the non-designated players that have made an impact, like Victor Vasquez, you know, was very clear about the fact that he's like, his wife came up to take a look at the city and said, yep, this is where we want to be. This is where we want our family yeah. to be. This is a player that was coming off a season in Mexico where he felt kind of threatened at times. So he just wants to be a place where he can be safe and relaxed. So no, it just doesn't have the cachet. And if you're Toronto, you're fine with that. I say, we know the type of player that we want to go after. So I don't think Toronto is going to, if they're going to keep spending like this, I don't think they're going to be going after the type of players that Atlanta has, for example, players with sell-on value. They're looking for players at the kind of the end, but are still in the in.
Maybe
in
not the end, but not they're not going to be sold on. Yeah, like prime, late prime sort of thing.
Yeah,
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I don't know, but I will harken back to the fact that like this signing, while it's super cool for Toronto FC and a great show of ambition, and very cool for MLS as well. It just, I saw it and it just immediately kind of hammered home to me once again that like these roster rules, like teams are spending more money or enough money that they should be better than they are as soccer teams. And if you're really, really serious about beating Liga MX and becoming one of the top leagues in the world in terms of quality of play, you wouldn't design the league this way. But that's not the main priority. I've written this subject. I've screamed about it on this podcast too many times to count. So I'll stop there. But it's not the main priority. It's competitive balance. It's protecting all of the owners. It's all of those different things. So, you know, that's the route they've chosen. I wish they would reconsider. It doesn't seem like they're really going to. But there you have it. Anything else you want to add on Insignia in Toronto before we move and take a quick break and move into the international side with Canada and the U.S.?
I'm really curious who they surround him with. Like, yeah. I still think Pozuelo had a down season. He admitted there was a lot of personal problems. Do I think he's the perfect kind of number 10 to be playing behind him? He's looked great in MLS, but like, I don't know. There's tiers, right? And I don't know if he's right there just yet. I think you have to surround him with other players. I think Javinko was kind of at his best, and Toronto FC admitted, you know, after they lost in 2016, they were very upfront about the fact that they needed a creative midfielder. And that was the missing piece in Victor Vázquez, right? I do think you're going to
need another. Don't you think Pozuelo could be that though?
He could, but then yeah, I still
he's
think
he's been that before.
Yeah. You're going to need other players around him.
A consistent striker. If Josie's gone, if Akinola, who knows how he's coming off that injury. Yeah. All of that.
Yeah. I just don't think they're done. So I'm curious what kind of, you know, wing players they bring in. You know, I'm curious how Bob Bradley kind of sets up his team tactically to best kind of take advantage of him. Because no, I don't think this team is done. And that's the key thing to me is, right, who are you going to put? Because again, Javinko was at his best because he had Josie Altidore, a much bigger forward to play off of, right? It's building this puzzle. And I don't, they're certainly far from there for now.
Yeah, I have a lot of faith in Bob Bradley to kind of figure it out, and there will be more moves on the way. Josh, I'm going to put you on the spot. Where does Toronto FC finish in the East in 2022? We don't have all of the information, obviously, but guess what? You're on the spot. You got to go.
I'm envisioning fourth or fifth.
Okay.
Fourth, fifth. I no higher than that though.
Sort of similar to Javinko's first year in 2015.
Yeah, I think the playoffs, I think you get in because I have faith that they will bring in other players, you know, probably for the start of the season. But where I worry is where they're going to be in July, you know, when Insigne comes in. Also, after having played a full season.
Yeah.
Right.
But he'll be motivated to keep going ahead of the World Cup, assuming Italy can make it in. Out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
That'll be easier said than done. One last break on this show. We're going to come back. Josh is going to set the scene for what it's like in Hamilton, what we're expecting from the Canadian national team's home game, hopefully in front of fans, if everything's cool, later on in January. Stay with us.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Welcome back to Allocation Disorder. I'm Sam Stayskull. He is Josh Cloak. Josh, I'm theoretically coming to your neck of the woods. I think there's a party at your house before the game for later this month, assuming I'm allowed into the country, which we don't know yet if I will be. But the U.S. men's national team is set to play Canada in a World Cup qualifier on January 30th. The U.S. starts the window on the 27th against El Salvador in Columbus and finishes it on February 2nd against Honduras in St. Paul. I believe same opponents for Canada, right?
Yeah. Just
different order. And Canada's games are both away against the Central American countries. So, you know, Canada obviously is off to a good start in World Cup qualifying. 1-1 draw with the U.S. in Nashville way back in September, the start of the Ocho. Josh, kind of what's the mood with Canada right now? There was some news today about COVID-related news for Canada.
Yeah, so they've canceled. They had a training camp in Florida where they were going to have a friendly against Guatemala. That's been canceled. So what we can now assume is players will probably meet, you know, not long before the first match in Honduras for probably just a few brief training sessions. That will probably mean a lot more kind of video training sessions, not training sessions, a lot of video meets with John Herdman and the players, you know, throughout this month. You know, if you're John Herdman, you're frustrated at that, obviously, but this is a team that, you know, they're kind of starting 11. The core of this team is not up for debate anymore. We have a very good idea of what this team is. This is a team that won't be any less motivated. I think we saw that, you know, in Edmonton when they win both games, including against Mexico.
Yeah.
To me, I think that was the turning point where it's like this team, you know, no longer has just enough talent or, you know, stands a good chance. They have to qualify for the World Cup. They are that good. They're in that place right now. They're motivated enough. So the news is disappointing for the organization and for fans, but I don't know exactly how much it throws them off because I don't know, you know, how many tactical changes they were going to make leading right into this kind of,
and of course, a lot of their guys are coming over from Europe anyhow. And so they wouldn't have been participating in this camp regardless, even if it had gone forward. So,
yeah, exactly. But look, in terms of the kind of scene, this team was, let's think about Canadian, you know, newsmakers of 2021. They were right up there with the women's national team, gold medalists. You know, in terms of Canadian kind of teams of the year, this was a year where I would say the general population got wind of the fact that, oh, wait, the men's national team are good. And this men's national team are, you know, could do something that haven't been
done in the
general.
I mean, Drake got on board.
That's the seal of approval. I was really happy for anybody that hasn't read. I wrote in the last window about the kind of inside details of that Drake meet. If anybody hasn't checked that out, some people got the exclusive invite. Some players did not. Alfonso Davies was kind of, I think there was some concern on his part that he missed the invite from Drake. So there's some details there that fans might want to check out, but people are believing in this team in a way that they haven't in years and for very good reason.
So I was teasing you sort of at the start of qualifying where I was like, Canada's going to make it. No problem.
Yeah. But
they're one of the top three teams. They should be in without a doubt. And you're like, slow down, Sam. The years of scar tissue that have built up following this team.
And I'm not the only one.
It sounds like that's sort of turned though over the first eight games.
It was hard. When I left Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, I left with a few other reporters that night, and we were kind of saying in the Uber home, we're like, this is it now, isn't it? Like, this is real now, isn't it? You know, the game against Panama at home, when Davies scores, you know, that kind of goal that went viral, that's the goal that makes you think, or that win makes you think, okay, now they have a chance to qualify. But it's beating Mexico convincingly.
Being in first, past the halfway point.
That's the one where I think a lot of people said, now they can do it. This isn't a team that we think is just kind of going to sneak in a third place. They've built a cushion now.
Right? Slight cushion. Panama's in fourth, only 2 points behind. So it is jumbled at the top. But there is the good news that the fourth place team will be playing in the playoff against the Oceania teams.
Well, let me ask you. It's better if I ask you, what is the perception of the Canadian national team in your neck of the woods? Like, is this team to be feared now? Or is it still like, yeah, we'll see?
I mean, it should be feared if it's not. I mean, this is a team that really frustrated the U.S. in Nashville. It wasn't exactly a proactive game plan that John Herdman rolled out in Tennessee, but it was a stifling one. The U.S. didn't really create, and Canada could have easily and maybe should have won that game.
Yeah.
If they take their chances. And we saw what happened. You know, Josh, you and I were sitting together in the press box at BMO. When was that? Almost 2.5 years ago now?
2019.
In Nations League?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2019. And that was a U.S. team that got bossed around by Canada in that match. That game was not close. And I think it was 2-0. Maybe it was 2-1. I can't remember if the U.S. scored or not.
2-0.
And that was the last time they played in Canada, you know, and Canada has only gotten significantly better since then, right? We saw what they did to Mexico in Edmonton, saw what they did to Mexico in the Gold Cup in a game that they narrowly lost. But, you know, you have guys like Tejan Buchanan and Alfonso Davies and Jonathan David and Steven Eustachio and Richie Larea, and so on and so forth. They have good players all over the field now.
You know what all those players have in common?
Kyle Lamb.
And you know what all those players have in common that makes this team, it makes it so much more believable that they could qualify? Those are all players on an upward trajectory in their career who all know that if they qualify for the World Cup, their personal stock goes through the roof. And I'm not saying that's the sole motivating factor, but what I am saying is if you're Stacchio, you know that if you go to a World Cup and you play the way you have been through qualifiers, you can have your pick of the litter of clubs afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're Kyle Larin, who I don't think is completely happy in Turkey, you can go places afterwards. Right? It's Jonathan David as well. If he doesn't move in this window, which it looks like he
Larin
might.
Too, by the way.
Yeah, you can go elsewhere. And that's what's really exciting here.
So I think the perception is a team on the rise, a talented team with some dangerous, dangerous, dangerous players. Of course, everyone respects the hell out of Davies, right? And why wouldn't you? But I still think that there is an element for sure that is like the U.S. should beat Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly at home, you know? And that didn't happen in Nashville, and the reaction after the game was not exactly positive from the American fan base, and understandably so, because, you know, the U.S. probably should beat Canada at home, right? And maybe, but when you go up to Canada in January and, you know, knock on wood, if there are fans there, you know, I expect that, I don't know, I'll ask you about that, but if there are fans there, the place will be insane, I imagine.
Yeah.
And that will be really tough. So, yeah, at this point, I think the teams are relatively evenly matched. The U.S. certainly has more depth than Canada does. But 11 versus 11, I don't think it's a huge, huge difference. So give us the scene in terms of COVID restrictions and what you think is going to happen with this match here in 3 weeks.
Yeah, so right now, all professional teams in Ontario, which I guess we're just talking about the NHL teams and the Toronto Raptors, are not allowed to have fans. I think the cap is 1,000. So you're basically looking at, you know, parents and it basically that's where it's at and guests. It sucks, right? It really sucks. I've been to, you know, multiple NHL games without fans and it's not the same. And it stands to be even, I almost think it stands to be even worse. You know, at the outdoor, at Tim Hortons Field, which is outdoors.
Because doesn't get more Canadian than that.
I know. You're going to let, you know what? Tim Hortons Field is beautiful. To one side of the stadium, you'll see what Hamilton is known for, which is, you know, dozens of steel mills and the smoke billowing out of them. And the other side is our beautiful escarpment, which is this kind of raised natural forest.
Escarpment. That is not a word we use in the United States.
Well, it's one that's one that you'll have to learn here when you spend time in Hamtown. But no, like it will not be the same. I don't know where outdoor fields kind of fall into this. I suspect that it will not be full, right? And
what is the capacity? 25-ish, right?
It's even less. 20, 25, somewhere in and around there. It's a little, I believe it's a little bit bigger than BMO Field. Where it gets difficult, and I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but it's important to know, our premier in Ontario is really not a well-liked person right now. He's taking a lot of heat for closing the schools once again. He's going to be under pressure. Their government's going to be under pressure to make a decision that they'll have to justify, right? It's going to be difficult to say, well, you can bring in, maybe 5, 10, 15,000, maybe 20,000 people into the stadium, but schools are still closed. That's where it gets really, really tricky. And I'm saying this as a parent, it's not an easy one to make. I suspect you and I will be there. I don't know how many people will. If I had to bet right now, I think it's an empty stadium, which is a bummer.
That is a bummer. It'll be safer that way, of course, which is nice, and that's good. But man, this was one I was looking. It was towards the top of the list in terms of qualifiers that I was looking forward to. This one,
I still think you'll be here. I think you'll be allowed.
Yeah, but if there's no fans, then it's not as fun of an occasion. I'll put it like that. But yes, hopefully I will still be there. Fingers crossed. The plan is for both me and Paul Tenorio to be there along with Josh, so we'll have plenty of coverage from that match. Regardless, knock on wood, everything stays the same. But yeah, it should be a fun one. And Canada is going to make the World Cup. So is the U.S. So don't worry too much about it. Anyway, Josh, thank you so much for joining me, man. I really appreciate it. I had fun. I hope you did too.
I did.
I hope you all had fun listening to us. A Canadian and a closet Canadian here.
Are you gonna share a little bit about this closet Canadianness?
Yeah, I think it's not a secret or anything. My dad was born in Ontario. He lived there until he was 4 or 5. So there you go.
Yeah. So you're kind of, you've been out and about over here.
That's right, out and about.
And you could get your passport. You probably want the passport.
I can get a passport. My brother and I talk about that. We've been talking about it for a decade. We are lazy and we've never done it. Anyway, maybe one day. Not today, though. Thank you for listening to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam. He is Josh. Until next time.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.